The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. Indeed, we're live today, and I have a very, very fascinating program for you, to say the least, and I'm going to tell you why that's that way in just a second. But, you know, what I want you to understand is that as time progresses and we have different shifts and changes in our life and how our body adapts to the environment and physically grows and changes, our hormones are shifting. And, you know, everybody says, well, I'm too fat because it's my hormones, or I don't feel good because it's my hormones, or I'm going through, in the case of a man, it's andropause. In the case of a woman, it's menopause. You know, we all do those kind of things and we blame it on something that we really don't understand. But today we're going to understand it and we're going to put a different framework around it. And I have the pleasure, the privilege of having somebody with me who I consider a friend, a colleague, somebody who I admire because of her brilliance. And unfortunately, she speaks Italian better than I do. Dr. Julie Marischal. Wait, welcome, my friend. You're out there.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Looking forward to it. Yeah, very much so.
So, Dr. Julie, listen, you know, you've been in practice a whole lot. A lot of years, and you've had the ability to look at hormone replacements and normal hormone transitions within people and so forth. And so what I want to start with basically is simply this, you know, men and women both have hormones. Okay. So we're just different in species, but why do we break down seemingly today more so than we did before? Why are we showing all of these sidebar symptoms, if you will, hormones, you know, and let's talk about the basic hormones for men and women as well as we get into this.
Sure. So I think everybody, when they hear the word hormone, they think estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. And they think those are the only things they have to look at and manage. And as we age, they think they go down. So they just increase them, whether it's through natural HRT therapy or they're doing some kind of compounded formula. What we forget is that there's insulin, melatonin, cortisol, pathways that detox these hormones that really play into how the body heals, how the body feels, the energy, the vitality that we experience.
You know, Dr. Julie, we're seeing, you know, people with really, truly aberrant levels of hormones these days. Estrogen levels that are out of balance. We know there's multiple types of estrogens, and some are very dangerous if they're not blunted. And when we talk about hormone balance, and blunting, we talk about progesterone. And guys are becoming, I'm going to use the word eunuchs, if you will.
So true.
It's like their testosterone levels gone out the window. It doesn't exist anymore. Why? What's happening to our society that we're seeing the aberration present itself the way it is?
No, we're seeing so much. When we used to run testing 20 years ago, we would see what are called xenoestrogens, the things you find in plastics, pesticides. And I would tell patients, stay away from plastics or don't be around pesticides. If you're a golfer, try and be more safe when you're out on the golf course. However, now it's in the water. It's in the environment. It's in everything we do. And so these xenoestrogens are so present that we almost can't stay away from them. So I've gone back to, we have to keep the body healthy and whole. How's the liver? Is the liver processing it? What's the gut doing? How's the gut processing it? I don't think we're going to stay away from these xenoestrogens in the environment that we live in nowadays. So our bodies need to be optimal through all of the different things that you do in your clinic. It doesn't start with just estrogens. It starts with, how do you get this body healthy and whole so it can process whatever it runs into?
Dr. Julie, when do people really start seeing this abnormal shift in hormone? I don't feel good. My energy is not what it's supposed to be. We know men and women both have to have certain levels of testosterone. It's a libido driver, but it's also a strength giver and an energy producer. And we're seeing more and more people with, I just don't feel good. So what is the presentation and when does it hit?
You know, it's so interesting. We had an onslaught of super high executive businessmen come in for weight loss. And so we ran a hormone panel. Every single, and I'm talking maybe 38 to 42. This was the age group of these men. A little bit overweight, maybe 30 pounds they needed to lose, running huge companies, entrepreneurs. All of them had testosterone in the 200s.
Oh my gosh.
It was unbelievable. And so that was enlightening to me that it doesn't have to be at 50 or 60. Like these things for men and for women are going on much earlier than we're giving it credit to when we brush it under the rug or we just think we don't feel good. And so we've gone to testing more and more and more instead of assuming that at a young age, this doesn't happen to be occurring.
When you look at these people and they're coming in and, you know, they're tanked out, they're stressed out. That's basically what the driver is. They're in positions that either emotionally or physically, they're over the top. How does that shut the hormone system down to the point where they've got nothing? They're depleted.
What we're seeing, and I know that at your clinic, you run the same test. We run the Dutch test. We look at cortisol levels. And so when they are just gas pedal to the floor, sympathetic overdrive, no parasympathetic tone, never taking any time for parasympathetic restoration, things that would calm the nervous system. They're just on the go. The system says, why should I produce testosterone? I don't necessarily need it to survive if I'm running from the lion in the jungle. And so I'm just going to shut this pathway down. I'm going to eat more sugar. I'm going to sleep less. And I'm just going to make myself feel better by drinking a bunch of coffee instead of saying, I probably need to take a beat, sit on the beach, go to yoga, go for a walk, spend quality time with the family, not around computers, and let the parasympathetic nervous system heal. And then our pituitary, our adrenals, our hormones start to revive themselves.
You know, there's this little gland in our head towards the back. It's called the pineal. And it produces melatonin. And everybody talks about melatonin. Well, if I got to go to sleep, I'm going to take a little melatonin. In our office, I will use up to 200 milligrams or even more of melatonin at nighttime, not just 2 or 3 or 5 or 10, and combine it often with glutathione. But having said that, asking is how does that system is affected, and it indirectly deals with all those feel-good hormones and regulatory patterns and reset in the middle of the night and so forth. How do we disrupt that? I mean, people say, they'll complain, well, I don't sleep, and then we knee-jerk and say, well, you need melatonin. But it's far more than that. It's broader than that. It has a huge impact downstream as well.
I think what's so fascinating and so incredible about your practice and how I've learned from you as well to practice is that you have to look at the whole body. So if they're just dumping melatonin in because they're matching the medicine to the symptom, whether it's a drug or a natural nutrient, it isn't necessarily going to solve the problem. And like we were talking earlier, sometimes you have to look at neurotransmitters. So serotonin becomes melatonin. So does this start with our mood? Does it start with the busy lifestyle we have? Does it start with what we're eating and what we're putting in our body? I think it starts at all of those levels. And so really taking a thorough deep dive into how is the body detoxifying? What are we putting into the body? How is it being used in the system? Whether we do it through saliva, we do it through urine, or we do it through blood levels, we really want to test instead of guess and know what's happening. One of the things that really that we see in the clinic, and I'm sure you do too, is all this pelleting that women are getting. And they're feeling amazing for a while and everything is fixed. And oh my gosh, libido is great. And they feel so good. And then all of a sudden, 6 to 9 months later, they're feeling terrible again because they haven't taken the time to look at the entire system like you do and like we do.
Yeah, they do the same thing with guys too. You know,
yeah.
For guys, if you're using testosterone supplementation, you have a lot of different ways of going after it. You have natural things that will stimulate the body's own production, but there's usually an inflammatory barrier that's not allowing that to take place. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's either going to be pellets or a cream, or it's going to be a trochee, a sublingual absorption. Mm-hmm. And if that's mixed with crisin, which is an aromatase inhibitor, you know, it seems to do the job pretty well. But if you give optimal, if you end up having symptoms that you're actually...
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rozell. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. And we have a very special program today and a very special guest, a colleague, someone who I admire more than I can possibly begin to describe, Dr. Julie Marshall. She's from Denver, Colorado, and we're talking about hormones and hormone replacement therapies. We're going to get into the second part of the program. We just touched upon it a little bit. Welcome back, Dr. Julie. Let's continue the conversation. I had to switch equipment around here because for some reason we were dropping off, which is not usual for my end of the world, but it is what it is. So
sounds good now.
We sound right on. So let's start talking what we were talking about before, and that, you know, we're seeing hormone replacements being used, but they have side effects and they fix things for a while, regardless of what it is. And then all of a sudden, whether it's man or woman, they go back to it and the same symptoms reoccur or even worsen over a period of time. So the question becomes is why?
And so I think we were mentioning that instead of just addressing it as low, high, we see this one low, so we're just going to add to it, or we see this one high, so we're just going to dump it down. It's really taking a look at that entire picture. And especially when we're looking at the pelleting, once it's in for good. And so it's in for the next 3 to 4 months. And so if those pellets are right, that's incredible. But if those pellets end up being too high, or the body can't process out the excess estrogen through the liver and the gut, then we really end up with someone who feels awful or feels great for the first set of pellets and doesn't feel great for the second set of pellets. And so it goes back to not only what does the lab testing look like, but what are the things you can do on your own, even if you are doing HRT? I mean, we forget that just because we're adding some either synthetic or natural element, you still need to exercise right, eat the right amount of protein, take the right amount of nutrients. For women, they're recommending 30 grams of protein at each meal is the amount of protein you want to get, the quantity you want to get. And I'm sure that you see it, and I know I see it in my practice, women just don't eat, or they don't eat enough protein. And so they're getting muscle wasting and wondering why they're maybe thin or losing weight, or maybe can't lose weight, but don't have any muscle tone. And testosterone in and of itself, although it provides an incredible amount, doesn't give the muscle tone if we aren't eating and exercising.
Julie, just talking on the proteins, a lot of people out there that are going to recoil very hard right now with commentary and say, well, I don't want to eat meat. You know, I don't want to eat animal products. So in your opinion, is it possible to get the amount of protein on a breakdown level over a period of the day without eating red meat or something, if you will, that bleeds? I have a lot of vegans that come into the practice. I mean, they're really dedicated vegans that will not touch an animal or anything. They might eat a little cheese. They might have an egg occasionally, but they stay away from it. Is it possible?
So I tend to lean towards the red meat eating philosophy. But as well, you could imagine in Colorado, we've got the vegan movement running pretty hard. And so there are a few products that we will have them supplement with, and they're some of my favorites, and I'll make sure to share that with you so that you have it in your clinic. But it's an amino acid, and it's a vegan amino acid. And what I love about it is, like, 5 pills is 25 grams of protein. So of course, you don't want to just take pills for life, but we'll supplement with this. And I learned it from a vegan practitioner and discovered that tons of bodybuilders use this product. Like, it's a very well absorbed product. It's a 99% nitrogen absorbable protein. So kidney patients can use it. It immediately gets into the system. So we'll use that. I do admittedly have a harder time balancing with my vegan patients. But when they're really good vegan patients, I think they know what they should be eating to get their quantity of protein. It's the vegan eating pasta patient who isn't implementing all the veggies, where I think it becomes really difficult. And I've seen that sarcopenia when they're eating poorly.
Sure. They start eating, you know, the chips and the dips. Mm-hmm. And you know, they think just because they're not eating an animal something that their diet is swell. But I think you're talking about perfect amino too.
Yes.
We use
a product called Mapsin too. They're very similar.
We use it all the time. But that's the piece that we see is that so many of these people come in and they said, you know, I don't want to eat anything that bleeds or, you know, so forth. They'll use that statement often. And so it's a hand holding all the way through, making sure it can be done, but you have to add things. You have to add B12. You have to add folate. You have to add, you know, making sure that you're getting the right amino acids and that they transport properly within the system and they're there for repair and building, because otherwise, let's talk about the liver a little bit and talk about that process of, if you will, screw up, where people cannot denature, break down the hormones, so they can't create the feedback loop that says, okay, I need more now, so we need to produce it. And most practitioners don't even think about that because, you know, you have estrogen levels and the body has to denature, they break it down and so forth. And that's done in different phases of detoxification. Do you address that first, later, or during?
So in younger patients, I address it first. And so in younger patients, we'll start with a liver detox or a liver cleanse, especially if there's acne, if their skin's breaking out, if they have tender breasts, even in patients who are 40 to 60 with any type of high estrogen symptoms, we'll start with liver health, have it start breaking down those estrogens before we even add hormones, even if on the Dutch test it comes back low. And what I love about that test is that you can see the three pathways where estrogen should be clearing. So you know if you have to go heavy methylation, heavy gut, or heavy liver for wherever those bad estrogens might be building up. So we do start in that liver gallbladder arena. We never leave the gallbladder out when we're talking about liver.
It's one of the areas, and I always look at that first. I try to find out which phase of liver detoxification is not being supported properly. If estrogens are not being denatured, particularly whether it's men or women, and today with, you know, years ago, just as a sidebar, it was unheard of for a man to have breast cancer. In today's world, depends on the author, it's anywhere from, you know, 2 to 5% of all breast cancers are male. Crazy. The breast tissue and the prostate tissue are the same. So we're seeing a huge increase in men's prostate cancer as well. That all by itself now is blunting the expression, if you will, of hormone. When we get into the second half of the program, I want to talk about several things. Obviously, I'm going to talk about COVID's influence on this and other viral patterns, but I also want to talk about sex binding hormones and why somebody who seems to have normal patterns within the blood still is showing deficits and is not being transported properly and how we handle that. And I know you see that all the time. We're coming up very closely to a break at this point, and so I don't want to get too far in depth with the topic that we're on right now, but this is so important and people don't realize it. And, you know, if you start talking about DHEA and the triggering mechanisms all the way downstream, nobody looks at those as an initial first blush. And I think that's important. And when we come back, I want to ask you a minute on that. We're coming up to a break. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rizzo Live. I have a very special guest, someone who I not only call friend, but admires as a colleague and happen to love this woman. She's amazing. We'll be right back after some very important messages. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dr. Tom Rizzo Live continues now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rizzo. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. Indeed, I am, with a very special program. And more importantly, a very special guest, Dr. Julie Marischal from Denver, Colorado, ski country, someplace I look on a regular basis. Welcome, Dr. Julie.
Thank you.
We're talking about hormones, and, you know, everybody goes crazy worrying about their hormones. Guys are going to their docs, and, you know, guys in their 30s with low libidos and erectile dysfunction problems and more transition problems at all kinds of ages. And, you know, we used to think that it was, you know, something that happened once you stopped, in a woman's case, with menstrual cycles. But now we're seeing them at different stages all the way through. Not a good thing. People are suffering needlessly, but we're trying to look at the different platforms. I want to talk about some of the things that we've seen since COVID. A lot of research has been coming out of the world now and being revealed that the COVID virus and the vaccines and so forth have triggered all kinds of abnormal responses. And these responses cause inflammatory reactions within the body. They cause aberrant displays of hormones and so forth. We know that things like Epstein-Barr virus is being activated, and other types of enveloped type of viruses, common cold, the flu, and things of that nature and so forth. But let's stay with this platform. What have you seen in your patients relative to hormonal balance problems since COVID and since the vaccines and the boosters and so forth? Have you seen a shift?
So we have seen a shift, and it's hard. I feel like it's hard to pinpoint, in the sense of they haven't been able to specifically dial in, but the correlations are definitely there. And so there's no denying that cycles have been dysregulated. Women's cycles have been dysregulated. The amount of low hormone levels that we've seen across the board when we're testing is so different. And we can attribute it to, I often think, what are those viral panels? Like, we'll run a viral panel and it'll have the 7 herpes viruses in it, which Epstein-Barr virus is a herpes virus. And so we'll see either herpes 1 and 2 or HHV 6 and 7, and all of those will stimulate an autoimmune response in the system. So not only are we seeing autoimmune thyroid, but how is this affecting the pituitary? How is this affecting? I mean, if the autoimmune condition is being affected in the thyroid, it's being affected in the other endocrine organ systems that the body has. And so there's so much dysregulation. Where do you start? We always go back to the basics. You just have to look at, how's the body detoxing? How's it working? What is that viral load? Do we start with liver or gut? How do we clear it? And that's why I was looking, when we were talking about doing this, at some of the online testing, just to see what was out there that people could Google and run for themselves. And although that's happening clearly all over the place, that people are running their own levels and their own numbers now that this easy testing is out there, it's impossible to put A and B together if you aren't looking at what's going on in the rest of the system. And it just dysregulates more. And so I don't think there's a lot of value in this inexpensive, quick testing that everybody's doing on themselves and then trying to solve the problem on their own, because there's more to it than A equals B.
Yeah, this is not accurate, number one. And number two, it's not broad-based enough and fractionated enough to give you all the pieces of the puzzle that you have to really fix something. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem that I have with it. You know, for a quick test, looking at something, maybe. But until you see the subfractions, I mentioned the first part of the program, there are 3 different forms of estrogens. And you need to know what the levels are, and you need to know why they may be aberrant to begin with. We talked a little bit about inflammatory reactions causing a barrier, if you will, in reception, or a lock and key mechanism, a hormone going into the system to be able to turn the system on and do what it's supposed to be doing. Let's talk about that for a second. What, you know, I talked a little bit quickly about sex binding hormones when we're off the air. Let's look at somebody who has a relatively okay hormone level when they first come to you. Now, if the problem isn't fixed, obviously it's
if you don't use it, you lose it type of thing, and continues to drop down. But what causes those inflammatory barriers that stops that lock and key mechanism that doesn't allow the hormone to work? And that may be the key instead of the hormone itself.
Agree 100%. I mean, it's the same with thyroid. And so when we're looking at hormones, and especially women who've been on birth control pills for a long time, or I mean, birth control pills, although not called this, they're just a xenoestrogen. And so they're filling the gap, but they're not turning the key. So we have all the gaps filled that makes it look as if the body is complete or whole, sometimes even in testing, when in fact, none of the engines are turned on. And so we talk about that a lot. And so you have to get rid of all of those keys that fit in the locks, but don't turn the engine very well. And it's hard. For a long time, we couldn't find very many avenues to lower sex hormone binding globulin, especially women would have not been on birth control pills for, I mean, sometimes 20 years, and sex hormone binding globulin was still high. And so recently we found a few nutrients that will help lower and take sex hormone binding globulin out of the system. So now you have all of these available receptor sites that the estrogens can glob onto and make turn the engine on. But if we're living in a full environment of plastics, pesticides, insulin, sugar, eating foods like that, we're just playing the one step forward, two steps back game. And so it really takes not only looking at detoxifying and cleaning up those receptor sites, but continuing to stay on point. I think the theme of this year for me has been consistency. And that's where we lack in so many different areas, whether we're trying to change hormones or we're trying to eat right or whatever we're trying to do. And this is the same way. There has to be a consistent movement towards the right goal with very little variation into all those other avenues that dysregulate them.
I want to go back into part of the conversation we had earlier on, and we talked about the stress patterns doing what they're doing to people, guys with low libidos and testosterone levels down, but also with women, and it's shifting that whole situation. Is stress more relevant today for whatever reason? And I don't mean just now through COVID, but what we're talking about is things that have been disrupted now for years. Is stress the thing that you look at first, or are you looking at environmental, the xenoestrogenic patterns? You're looking at lifestyle. What comes first, and how do you evaluate it with your patients?
For me, I listen first. And if a patient walks in and says, oh my goodness, I'm so stressed, this is happening, I tend to hit those markers first. If the patient comes in and says, I've been living in this terrible environment and I work in a lab and I haven't been feeling good, then I'll look at the xenoestrogen type markers first, or at least speak with them in the language that addresses what they think the reason they're coming in is, so that they feel heard. When we're doing it, we literally put our program together, and I know you do too. And I learned this, a lot of this from you. We'll make sure we're addressing the emotional piece, the organic or detoxification piece, and often even the structural piece. So we literally approach it comprehensively, no matter how they walk in the door.
You know, it's interesting when you evaluate patients today, because it's so different. I've been in practice a lot more years than I want to admit to, but 45 of them. And the patient that I admit, that I examined years ago, was seemed to be, stronger. They used to be, they have less pieces of the puzzle. Today's world, you're seeing aberrations that take place because things are being passed through genetically because of previous exposures. People are living lifestyles. And so where I'm going with that is this. Things that back in the day were illegal, like cannabis, right? I'm the child of the 60s, so I saw all that stuff. Now, today, it's not illegal anymore. And people are using CBD oils of all different forms and types. Some of them are clean. Some of them are not. Some of them are using THC, medical marijuana. How much of that do we see contributing to the breakdown in hormone and dysregulation of hormones?
I think for the demographic that I have and that I'm after, I don't see it as much in the 20. It's much more in the 20 to 35 year old group. And I'd say we hit 30 to 65. But when younger males or females come in, the quantity of marijuana that they do oftentimes, it's unbelievable. And how it changes the system, not just the hormone system, but their sleep-wake cycles and their insulin and their cortisol. And then they wonder why they don't feel good. And the hardest time I have is most of them just don't want to hear it because there's so much positive out there about how it relaxes the nervous system or it helps you sleep or it does this for you. And so it's a real barrier to health, or at least that's what I'm seeing, because we don't have it. The quantity is so much greater than probably the health benefit that they're trying to claim they're getting from it. And how it's made. I had a patient who was a big janitorial supply company guy, and his job was to go to these plants where they're making the vaping pens and all those different kinds of things. And he said the tar or whatever it is that's left over after they make this, they can't get it off of the cement and the groundwater. So it's terrible. The chemicals that are in it. I mean, I think back in the day when you just smoked some regular bud, there was probably a lot better for us than what's happening now.
Yeah, it was a cleaner product.
And yeah.
Today's world, things are not that way anymore. And it's unfortunate. You know, we see people are exposed to all different types of aberrant chemistries and so forth in today's world, things that weren't there years ago. And here's the next piece. So we're in a world that we're dealing with cell phones and computer systems and areas that are putting out microwaves. And you live in Washington, D.C., where I live, and it's constant. You know, you can't move without being bombarded. How much of that is disrupting? Is it a little bit or a lot that is disrupting hormone regulation within the body?
I think it really depends on the patient. It seems like some people have a resiliency where they can withstand what's happening with all the EMF supply, all the 5G supply. So they present much differently than the patients who aren't resilient to that environment. And when they're not resilient in that environment, it's very hard to pull them out of that, whether it's turning off everything at home. I mean, they're constantly inundated. So I try and look at how do we approach each patient with the framework of the environment isn't changing. So what can we do to create the most resiliency inside the body so they can sustain the environment that they have to live in? And that's where we start, because just adding, and that's why these tea clinics and places just drive me crazy, because you can't just add. Sometimes it's a takeaway. Sometimes it's not adding the product that you think. It's taking that whole body approach to look at why does this patient not feel well, even if they're presenting with symptoms that say low testosterone, low libido. I sat next to a man yesterday in an airplane. It was so interesting. I've been working on this, and we actually started Instagram and a blog we're using called LibidoRestore.com. So I'm working on this, and I look over, and he's reading this article about sex, something, blah, blah. And I just had to ask him, like, what are you looking at? He was reading an article from 1919 that had been written explaining hormones to children and sexual education to children. And he was reading it because he's sort of on a journey. His wife had gotten sick and she had cancer. And so their lives have changed in that relationship department and in the intimacy department. And so it's everywhere at every age that hormones matter for intimacy, for relationships, everywhere across the board. And people are searching for how do I recreate this intimacy? I don't think we're finding it in all the right places. The article is very well written and very interesting, by the way. The way the lady explained it is he was just fascinated with it. But the point was the intimacy aspect of our relationships is being overrun by the chaos in our lives.
True. And we don't know how to communicate or connect anymore. And mm-hmm. that's part of it as well. And if you don't have that piece, that little silliness, that little craziness, if you will. Back in the day, we won't get into my history, but, life was very different. But that's a lost piece of humanity, in my opinion.
Agree.
And
yeah.
We don't connect that way, as I think we should as human beings. You know, you see kids and you take their toys away from them, meaning their phones and their laptops and so forth, and you sit them together. They don't know what to do.
Communicate.
It's oh my God, it's horrible. But I think that's across the board for every one of us. You know, we're going to be coming up to a break in just a little bit. And when we come back for the last segment, I want to ask you some very straight up questions about, and we'll have a short segment of, so how do you fix it? You know, what do you do? What are the steps? What's, what do you do next? But, I'm totally set back by some of the way doctors treat their patients, how they ignore them, how they set them aside. But anyway, Dr. Julie, don't go away. And we'll be right back after some very important messages. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, as you do every Sunday at high noon on the Eastern Seaboard. And those of you across the country that listen to us on a regular basis, you know the drill. You know the time frames. And as always, we want to salute our men and women in service. If there's anything I can possibly do for you, please let me know. I always will go out of my way for you. And thank you for you, because without you, we couldn't do what we're doing. My guest, Dr. Julie Marshall, we're talking about hormones and hormone replacement. And Dr. Julie, let's get into that a little bit. We only have a short segment. When should you and when shouldn't you, and what kind, when we're talking about hormone replacement therapy?
So at this point, we're dealing in our practice with a lot of premenopausal and menopausal women. So we do supplement. And I was just, what really sparked this was I was recently at a seminar with a woman who was lecturing, and she is 72 years old, and
oh, wow.
She looked awesome. She took her jacket off in the lecture. Her arms were just on fire. She looked so good. And what she was saying is there's no reason at whatever age we're at not to find a way to replenish, restore, and have proper hormone balance. And I think when you look at lab numbers, when you look at blood numbers, they're so, the acceptance of a number that's so low, it comes back with, oh, you're fine. It's right where it should be for your age. Well, who wants to feel their age? No one, especially as we're living longer. We have more vitality. We feel better. And so we'll supplement when we see low numbers to a place where they want to feel good. If it was 40, we'll look at those 40-year-old numbers and try and utilize both natural and compounded hormone replacement therapy. And I'll do a combination of estradiol, estriol, testosterone, pregnenolone, and DHEA. And then I'll put that in a cream, and we'll put our progesterone in a pill.
I know the doctor you're talking about, and she likes to take it all the way back to when you were like 30 years old.
I
had a conversation with her at one point. I said, you don't want me going back to when I was 30. Nothing but wrong.
That isn't where you want this libido.
No, not even close. But she's right, because if you do it the right way, and because as we get older, their systems begin to break down and they don't produce the levels that they used to. But there's no reason under the right circumstances that you can't take it back to where it's functional without the side effects. And that's the piece that
you're correct. And that takes going to someone who's going to listen, going to someone who knows where those pathways start, instead of just shoving it in through some number that looks good on paper, but the patient doesn't feel any better.
Yeah, we see so many people doing that. We see guys that are coming in and they're tanked. There's no energy. They don't want to be around anymore. And all of that is so dependent on other systems being viable, the heart,
right,
the brain, the body's strength and so forth. And if you don't feel good, if you don't have that ability to enjoy life in the moment, why are you here anymore? And whether it's me or anybody else, that's the whole process. And, something happens, there's an injury or other health issue that comes about. you know, we're scrambling to try to give it back instead of just dumbing it down with drugs and trying to cover up the symptom process, which makes the problem worse as time goes on. Neurologically, you have to look at the patient. Biochemically, you have to look at them emotionally. Dr. Julie, we're coming up to that part of the program where we're going to have to sign off. This has been such a pleasure.
Yeah,
I can't
thank
wait to
you
see you
so much.
We're going to touch again on a regular basis.
Agree.
You know, we do this program ongoingly for one reason and one free reason only. We love our audience and we want to do everything we possibly can to help them. Take care, my friend. I will see you
soon. Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you.